Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's the My First Gig podcast. Whoa, sharing stories of first gigs and shows. Comedians sharing their memories. The fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy. With Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig podcast. Here we go.
October. And the trees are stripped bare of all they wear. What do I care? October and kingdoms rise and kingdoms fall, but you go on and on. It's October. It's my first gig. It's me, Dwayne Dugan. Welcome to the pod. Thank you so much for joining. This is just getting better and better, isn't it? You know, whoever curates this podcast, I'm pointing at me right now, does a fantastic job. Every season's been great, but season three just has the bangers and the bangers and the bangers and the bangers. Hope you enjoyed Paul Smith last week. Hope you enjoyed everybody on the podcast this season. I'm loving season three. We're episode 7 today of the 12 of this season, and today's guest is Lauren Pattison. Now, I do think I need to acknowledge this was recorded sometime in the late 1970s, or at least it feels that way, because this was recorded at the 2018, 2019, Kilkenny Cat Laughs. It was recorded some time ago, and it's part of a group of podcasts that I lost on my hard drive that I have fixed now. And I say fixed, paid someone to fix it, and got all these back. So why waste them? Great interviews. And I guess, you know, if I was like, hey, what are you getting up to tomorrow? Which sometimes we do in the little opening natter, but for the most part, we're talking about their first gig, which, you know, should be a timeless thing. So it's okay to dip into these stories, because I guess these stories should still be the same. Maybe some of these comedians have gotten better at writing, better at comedian-ing, and will add some lies to their story. And sure, look, maybe we're missed out on that. But you know what? We won't give you better stories. We'll give you the truth. Yeah, how was the podcast? Yeah, it wasn't great, but it was true. That's what we say. So today's guest, Lauren Pattison, Kilkenny Cat Laughs. We sat down. I think I referenced Kiri Pritchard-McLean in this, because I had just finished Kiri's interview as Lauren came in. I'm pretty sure it was like real late at night. I had just like commandeered this room. I think it was like a breakfast room in Langton's Hotel in Kilkenny, and just was like, hey, can I record interviews in here? And they're like, yeah, whatever. But like, the second dinner finished, I was like, that's my room now. So I recorded all the podcasts in there, I think, maybe 4 or 5 of them that day, and was just like back to back to back. And people walking through, and being very polite. The only people who ever said a word during an interview can be heard during this podcast. They come in, give a quick well done to Lauren, and crack on. But yeah. What's going on, guys? It's absolutely miserable here in Dublin. It's a rainy Sunday night as I record this, because I'm putting out tomorrow for Patreon, for those who want to listen early. Is that you? Well, go to patreon.com/myfirstgig if you do. Otherwise, very happy that you're listening to this, powered by Acast Podcast. Or wherever you get your podcasts. But yeah, it's a bit of a miserable night. I was going to go for a run tonight. Don't know if you know about me, but I'm a bit of a runner. I've been retired for about a year and a half now. But during the pandemic, when we had nothing to do, I just went walking every day. Mad walking for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And then I was like, this is taking ages. Even though I had nothing but free time, I was like, I'll do this in half the time if I run. So I started running. And you know, it was great. I wanted to lose a bit of weight. I wanted to get fit. I like the idea of exercising. If, you know, if exercising's going well and you feel good, then exercising is all right. If you want to sit down and eat cake, then why would you bother exercising? But that's where I was. And I wanted to lose weight. And I lost a ton. I lost like 4 stone. Because I got really, like when I say I got big into running, I got really big into running. Real big. And then they opened the pubs. And then I got real big just in general. So real big into running, lose weight, open the pubs, real big boy. And yeah, I need to get back into it. Anybody out there, any tips for keeping up exercise? You know, tomorrow's another Monday. So it's one of those like, oh, tomorrow's the first Monday the rest of my life. You know, but if we're being honest, it's the 71st Monday of the rest of my life. Like every Monday is the first Monday. It never works out like that. And then you see like Twitter statuses being like, you don't have to wait till Monday. Tomorrow is your first day. I'm like, hey, mate, it's Friday. Get away from me. I'm ordering a spice box and having pints. Who are you waking up on a Saturday being like, oh, let's start the diet now? No, you start on a Monday. You give up on Thursday. You go mad for the weekend. And that's the cycle. Yeah, so any tips? Anything to keep me going? I'm recording this quite late at night because I never want to sleep again because it's October. So Fiona, my girlfriend, obviously wants us to watch scary things. And even then, we just watched this The Watcher on Netflix, which is more just like suspenseful, a bit of a thriller than scary. There are scary elements to it, but, you know, it's more in your head than bang, boo. But of course, I think everybody in the world now is watching me and not in the way that I am hoping actually happens, you know, because obviously I want everybody in the world to want to watch me, but for me to know that they're watching me, that's the whole point of this podcast. I don't do this for the stories. I do this for the adulation, for the fame. Or I should say my intent is that, because I'm alone here, guys. No, but yeah, looking at the window and just see the car going by and going, that car is there to surveil me. They want to know what I'm getting up to. So I'm not going to sleep for the next 2 weeks or however long it is. I have to figure out what to do for next week. I'm going to somebody's wedding next week, but it's like a Friday wedding. So it's like I got to leave here on like Wednesday and Thursday, and that's going on all weekend. So might be doing back-to-back podcast records tonight and tomorrow, but we'll see. Why worry about next week when we've got tonight right in front of us? Tonight, I'm going to have myself a real good time. I feel alive. Yeah. Fun chat. It's a bit of a short one today. I'll keep it short here at the top as well. All I can really say is, yeah, it was recorded a couple of years ago, and Lauren's been flying since. Obviously, the pandemic put a pause on a lot of things. She had a lot of upwards momentum at the time of recording, and then the pandemic kind of slowed everything down for everybody. But, you know, when you're on that initial climb, that can be the hardest fall. Because once you're up there, you're up there. For the most part, you know, you can resume a bit. But when you're up there, you have to almost like remind people, here, I'm on the way back up. And that's exactly what she did this summer in Edinburgh in August for the Edinburgh Fringe, her show. Was nominated for the best show at the Edinburgh Fringe, which, you know, is nothing to scoff at. So if you get a chance, go see it. There's some dates. I have the dates here in front of me. I saw she just did a hometown show in Newcastle in the Stand not too long ago, and has the Edinburgh Stand coming up at the end of this month with dates in Nottingham, Liverpool and Leicester next month before a run at the Soho Theatre at the end of this year, December 7th, 8th, 9th and 10th at the Soho Theatre in London. And yeah, I think I was speaking to her before the pandemic about coming over to Dublin to do a show, so maybe we might do that next year. Who knows? We'll see. But while you're waiting for that, how about we listen to a podcast? Let's just get into it, guys. Let's just get into it, you know? The door's open. Walk on in. Close your eyes. Walk into the room. And let the big arms of the My First Gig podcast welcome you. Sit you down. As you listen to this week's episode of My First Gig with Lauren Patterson.
You're just back from Australia?
From Australia and New Zealand. And I got in Montreal all the way in about to Kilkenny. 6 weeks. Yep, both equally similar place. They're equally exotic.
Yeah. And you go to Montreal and for that, is it?
Yep, so that's exciting. A week there and then up to Edinburgh for the next one.
Is it a brand new show again?
Brand new show, yeah. As yet unwritten.
As yet unwritten. I was going to say, how did you juggle being away and all that and writing the show?
But it's terrifying because you want to try new stuff, but then you're like, I'm in a different country for the first time and being paid to be here. I can't just drop new shit in. Like, that's so... Like, I wouldn't drop new stuff in on a, like, proper weekend club night at home. And I'm like, I can't do that. No, I've got to do my best stuff. And then you're like, well, when do I try new stuff? And then I got back and I was jet lagged and now it's today. And I was like, oh my God, when do you write new shit?
Did you have a chance to go around the town at all today?
No, I'm going to go around tomorrow.
See, a lot of acts come over here. And especially once you maybe haven't gigged in Ireland before, then they come to this little tiny town.
Yeah.
It's one street. And they're like, how is a hugely international comedy festival not just existing here, but succeeding for 20 years now?
Yeah.
It's quite mad. But let's go back and chat about your first gig.
Yeah.
But first, before that, do you have any memory of your first memory of comedy at all?
I remember watching Only Fools and Horses with my dad, which I know isn't stand-up, but like... It made us laugh and like,
sure.
I like just the, like always call him Rodney Dave and it was so stupid, but I was just like, that's funny. That's not his name. And because I was like a kid when I was watching it and like the screwing in the chandelier and the wrong one for just stupid stuff like that. And I think that's where I got my sense of humor from, like watching, like they used to let us watch the Royal Family, things like that, proper like classic British comedies. And I remember being really like maybe six. And I was sick off school and my dad let us bring the duvet downstairs, which is a classic sign that you're not well in a working class family. He made us chicken soup and he put the Jolly Boys outing episode of Only Fools and Horses on. And I think my dad was having the best sick day with us because he was like, oh my God, I'm just getting a chill in the living room and watch the telly I want to watch. And I remember watching that and proper loving it. And I must have been so young then. It was great. Best sick day ever.
Very nice. What about scene comedy then? Do you remember the first time
I went to see Russell Howard at the City Hall in Newcastle, which is still a pretty big venue. It's 2,000, but obviously compared to what he plays now, it's like half that, even smaller. And I remember I was right at the back. I was in the two seats that are normally the disabled seats, but they were the last two seats available. And I'd seen him, I think I'd seen his live at the Apollo set when I was about 14. And I was like, he just looked like he was having such a good time. So we got these last two tickets to see him. I remember it was the first time I'd seen proper like live comedy, like someone off the telly kind of thing. And I was like, this is amazing. Like just the atmosphere of being in like live comedy for the first time. I was like, I've never felt anything like this. I've never experienced anything like this. Because it's one thing sitting watching it on the telly with your man on a Saturday night. But then
being
with 2,000 people all laughing at it. And I was like, what must it feel like for him to have all these people laughing at him? And I remember wanting to queue to meet him. But my friend who I was with, her dad was picking us up and she didn't want to wait around for him because we were 14 and we had school the next day. And the one thing I regret to this day is not just getting in the queue and meeting them because no, like I've stood next to him at a festival, but I fangirled and couldn't say anything. And I was like, I wish I'd met him one day.
One day, yeah, of course. You mentioned there you wondered what it'd be like to be up there and getting that kind of reaction. So first time you see live comedy, you're starting to think, what is that like?
Yeah.
Did you ever think, was that a different kind of feeling to wanting to do it?
Yeah.
Was it more curiosity rather than a kind of a desire?
I think because I always liked making people laugh, but I had like a drama background. I was in drama groups. I went all that kind of thing. So I always liked to look for the laughs, but with other people.
Sure.
So I'd be doing like funny little improvs or stuff like that. And I was bouncing off other people, but I was like, that's just him. And I was like, that must be amazing. And I knew I liked to make people laugh, but I never envisaged, I didn't even know how I would get into anything like that. But the more sort of like comedy I watched, the funnier I would try and be in the drama groups. But instead of just being funny like in class, I would try and make funny little quips, and I started to try and be funny as an individual. And then at my drama group, they started to do like a stand-up course for kids. That must have been like a year later or something, so I was probably about 15, and I was like, I might try it, like I might give it a go, because at the time it was just like a fun thing to do on a Wednesday when you're a teenager, like a nerdy little teenager like me who likes drama groups. And I remember doing it for the first time and I was like, oh yeah, this is I always thought I like to make people laugh in a drama context, but I was like, no, I like to make people laugh on my own. I don't need anyone else, fuck these guys. I want to do it by myself. I loved it. So yeah.
So what kind of flicked the switch for you that you liked making people laugh? You obviously had a bit of a performance background.
Yeah.
That transitioned then into you, you know, going out there and doing your first gig. Did the course offer a gig at the end of it? Like,
so
some
we
of them
used
do?
To do it for like the other kids in the youth theatre, and all these like little, when the kids at the end of the term would show their plays, they might have, we would do like a little bit of stand up. But obviously it was nothing like major. It was in front of like parents and kids kind of thing, but almost like a school talent show. But I remember I started to like obsessively look into comedy competitions and who'd done them and who'd placed where and which names I recognized and, oh, what year did they do it, and oh, look, it's taken them this long. And I really liked Daniel Sloss, and he was only a couple of years older than me, maybe like 3 years older than us, and I think he'd done So You Think You're Funny when he was maybe like 17. And I was like, oh, so he's young, and he did. And it was the first kind of young person I'd seen in comedy. And I was like, well, he's young and he's doing all right, there's obviously a way in for me somewhere. And because I saw his name on this competition list, I was like, I'm going to do that competition. But I decided to wait till I was 18 because I was like doing my A-levels and all that thing. And I was like, when I'm 18, I'm old enough to go into pubs and clubs, I'm going to do it. So I was 18 in the December, and I entered in the... The audition was in the May 31st, pretty much 6 years ago. And that was my first gig. And I was a dickhead and got to the semi-finals off one gig. I was hammered in a field at Tea in the Park in Scotland. And they rang us up and they were like, yeah, you've got a place in the semi-finals. And I was like, oh, no, I was just doing it for the stage time and for the exit. I hadn't done it because I wanted to win. I'd done it because I was like, this must be the way into comedy. You do competitions. And that was the only competition I knew of. And I knew it was for people who'd been going a year, but I was like, well, I've been going one gig. Yep, I'll just do it, get a bit of stage time, and then maybe I'll find my way from there. And I was like, oh, you can give it to someone else. And they were like, no, you're doing
to pass it.
It And so then I panicked and was like, I need to find more gigs. And that was the kick up the arse for us to like really get into it.
Wow. What made you think that it was, what made you look to competitions? Like if you weren't aware of stand-up, how did you become familiar with competitions?
Because I'd started to watch, so when I was that age, Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow was on, so that's probably where I saw Daniel. And then you only like look people up, look on their Wikipedias, and I'd be like,
yeah.
Oh, and you see certain competitions like popping up, multiple acts would have done similar things. So if you read six comics you've seen on telly and all of them have done this competition, your little child brain goes, well, clearly, if I do that competition, then that is how I become a comedian. That is how I... And I knew when I started, I never wanted to be on telly and I never went in these things to win. But I was like, but that's the route these comics have taken. They've all done competitions. So I guess this is what I have to do. So I did a load of competitions. Like, that was the only one I did in the first year. And then I focused on getting some more stage time under my belt. And then after that year, I did like every competition under the sun, did them multiple times. I was just like, this is how people get. I'd looked at the names on those lists and I was like, if you're good, this is how you get noticed. And I was like, I'm going to keep going until I'm good enough to be noticed.
How did you go about writing for that? Where was that first gig? That's So You Think You're Funny.
It was in a pub in Newcastle, which ironically, when I went to uni there, became my local pub. It was in Heaton, which is like a East End of Newcastle. And it was like the room above a pub. And I was on with Lost Voice Guy, who's now in the finals of Britain's Got Talent. He was at that gig that night. Most of the others, I don't think, have kept it up. It was literally room above a pub.
That's interesting to see him doing well now.
Yeah. So chuffed for him. It is the break he needs, 100%.
Very
really
nice.
Hope he does well off it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How did you go about writing? So, because I'm guessing, you know, you've waited from 15, 16 to your 18. Yeah. So you're probably not doing the same material you did for the parents and the kids.
Yes, I went to see a lot of live comedy in that time. So I went to see like Russell Howard live. I started to go, I'd keep an eye out to see which comedians were coming to town. I'd watch comedians on the telly and then hope they would come in Newcastle. And I used to go and see a lot of the Edinburgh previews at the theatre where I did my drama group. Because at the time, the Stand had only just opened. So obviously that's now like the prominent comedy club in Newcastle. But at the time, a lot of the comedians used to go to the theatre where my drama group was because it was a nice small little theatre and it had a studio space. And I used to get cheap tickets for being in the youth theatre. So I saw Sarah Millican there. I saw Chris Ramsey there. I saw Jason Cook there. Alan Cochran. Who else? Kai Humphries. I saw like loads of really good comic, Gavin Webster. And I used to go and watch a lot there and just really absorb other people. And just, I think when you learn what makes you laugh, you learn what kind of comic you want to be. And likewise, the stuff that didn't make us laugh, I was like, well, then that's clearly not my kind of humour. So that's not the kind of stuff. Like, I didn't really like the super, at the time, not that I wouldn't laugh at jokes about sex, but I'd always find it a little bit more awkward because I was young, I couldn't relate to it as much. So when I was starting to write, I was like, well, I don't want to be particularly like crude or blue, because at the time that's not who I was. Whereas now, obviously, the older I get, like, there came a point when I started to feel comfortable talking about sex on stage. And I was like, it's because in my adult life, I'm now more comfortable talking about sex. Whereas when I was 15, I was like, huh, what? Sex? No. So I would never have spoke about it on stage. And I just learned the kind of things, like Russell Howard, how he just looked like he was having so much fun on stage. And it was just such, like, not trivial things he was talking about, but just such relatable, like, everyday stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to just talk about my life and have people click with it and have things that people resonate with.
Do you find the drama background, do you think that helped, or do you think how do you think that affected?
I never realized how much it had helped until I went to Edinburgh last year, until I could sit down, because it was the first time I'd done an hour show, and having that drama background, I was like, I know how to structure a show. I might not know how to structure a comedy show, but I know how to put a show together. It needs a beginning, a middle, and end. It needs, you know, like a hook all the way through to keep people interested. It needs to not all be on one level. And just applying everything I knew about how I would approach like a drama text, I was like, well, it's just that, but with my comedy material. So I looked at all the stuff I had and I was like, that's clearly the stuff that goes at the start. That's about me. That's about my job, my family. That's all introductory stuff. And then I was like, the meaty bit, the middle, that's the story. That's what I want to say. That's what I want to tell. And then the end has to be that really peak, like it has to build up to that. And just putting everything I knew about putting a show together, I'd never thought about tying that in with comedy. And I was like, oh my God, I do know how to do this. Like, whereas at first I was like, how do you even approach writing an hour? I've never done an hour's comedy. But then I was like, yeah, but I've done hour plays and I know how to do stuff like that. And I was like, it all goes together.
That's interesting. Yeah. Usually people talk about, you know, being comfortable on stage or something. You know, it's interesting to hear the actual, how it helps your writing and your structuring. The thing.
And that's the one thing I noticed, because I read all my reviews after Edinburgh and a lot of people commented on the structure. And I was like, yeah, I didn't realise how good I was at doing structure, because I'd never done an hour before. And I was like, I do think that drama background helps, and knowing how to keep people interested on stage for an hour from a different sort of skill set, and then just applying that to comedy, very useful. I want to direct shows next year, because I don't want to take a show, but I was like, I really want to give directing shows a go.
That first show, did you tell people about it? Did you invite people? Did you keep it kind of a secret?
I went with the boy I was going out with at the time, and I didn't tell anyone else until I got the phone call to say I'd got the semi-finals. So I maybe got the phone call 2 months after the gig, And then I was like, so then I told people, like a couple of months ago, I did this thing and now I'm going to Edinburgh. Ooh, surprise. And then I did a couple of gigs, maybe two or three gigs before I went up there, but didn't, I think my mum came to one, but I didn't sort of like publicise it. And then I started uni in the September, did a couple more gigs at the end of that year, but still in that first year, I probably did half a dozen gigs. And then when it got to the new year, and obviously you've made your friends at uni, people started to find out that I was doing it and what I did. And I remember one week going to the stand and there being like 35 people off my course. And my course was only 70 people strong, so literally half the course had turned up. And I was like, oh my God, no. Like, I didn't want anyone to know. This is horrible. But it went so well. And they were obviously drama students, so they were really loud and laughed at everything. And I was like, that's what you need in the crowd, 35 drama students to have your back.
So you didn't do a second gig by the time you got the phone call?
No, not. I'd like sort of done one and I was like, yeah, I enjoyed that. That's probably something I'll do again. And I kind of put it on the back burner and then got the phone call and was like, ugh. So I think I did the stand and maybe one or two other gigs before I went to Edinburgh, and then probably only two more gigs that year because I was still so new and I was like, well, how do you get gigs? Where do you go? So I kind of did the stand for that first 6 months. Then when it got into 2013, I started to look further afield and like just literally Googling like gigs in Manchester, gigs in like places I knew I could get to on a mega bus or a train, like gigs in Leeds. And I just sent email after email and obviously gradually started to get written. A lot of places wouldn't reply, but I would keep pestering. I was persistent. I was like, no, I'm going to do it. I spent all my student loan on mega buses and
that's hard.
B&Bs, yeah.
Did you go straight from school to uni?
Yeah.
So you were very, very young starting out.
Yeah, so when I was waiting for the So You Think You're Funny results, or when I went to the semi-finals, I was waiting for my A-level results. So I think that was literally my bio on their like website that year was like, by the time you've read this, I'll either have passed or failed my A-levels. Like that's, I was doing bloody exams. I was just a kid, like stupid.
What was it like being a kid? Because, you know, it's a struggle for a lot of women to start the way that it's conditioned, and even just the fact that it's just so overpopulated. But being such a young woman as well.
And I, especially at the time, I looked so much younger than what I was. So I was 18, but probably looked maybe 15 at a push. Like I looked like a child on stage. And I think in a way it did its favours because I never got heckled, because I think people were so taken aback that they maybe gave us the benefit of the doubt without realising what they were doing. Whereas I think some people, like, I think if I'd been an older woman, not even old as in old, but just older than 18, I think people might be more likely to be like, well, you shit, show us your tits, this. But because people are kind of on the back foot, I've then got those precious few minutes to make the impression I wanted to make. And I think it actually did its favours. I did get patronised a lot. I'd walk into green rooms and people would just not acknowledge us. Or they'd be like, oh, are you such and such a sister? Are you such and such a daughter? And I'd be like, no, I'm Lauren. I'm on the bill. And there'd be loads of time when I used to do gong shows, I'd stand waiting to be given my place on the show and they'd miss me out. And then I'd be like, you haven't given me a slot. And they'd be like, oh, who are you? And I was like, I'm Lauren, you know, the only girl's name on the list, and funnily enough, the only girl. But people would just think I was like someone's sister tagging along. Like I once got refused entry to a gig I was on in Newcastle because I hadn't brought my ID with us because I didn't plan on drinking. I was doing a gig then leaving and they wouldn't let us in. And I was like, but I'm on the lineup. And they were like, need to prove you're 18. So I had to run back to my halls of residence, ring the promoter on the way and be like, I did get to the gig, but they won't let me in kind of thing. Get me ID, go back. And I was like, God, I bet other people don't have this problem. I'm going to prove how old they are to get into their own gig.
It's definitely unique. Talk me through the months before you go up on stage for the first time.
Yeah, oh, I was terrified. I was really nervous. And I remember thinking, as long as I remember the words, then that's fine. Like, all I've got to do is get the right words out in the right order kind of thing. I was like, if people laugh, that's a bonus. I was like, at this stage, it's not even about making the people laugh. It's just about remembering what I've written. Like, and then if they laugh, great. If not, at least you did it. At least you remembered it. Like, I was so scared. And those nerves never, obviously they've like decreased a little bit, but it's like when you feel your heart getting faster and like your stomach starts to clench and you're like, why am I getting so nervous? I've done this a million times. Like, oh, don't think it ever goes away.
Do you remember your first joke that night, or the gist of it?
I remember I had a joke about Lady Gaga because it was around the time she wore that dress made all out of meat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was on about like how like all the girls at school had like gone mental and loved Lady Gaga for wearing a dress made of meat. And I was like, oh, if I wore a dress like that, they'd kick the shit out of us. And I had a joke about my science teacher telling us if I did science at A level, there'd be an A in it for us. And I was like, oh, there's an A in chlamydia, but I don't want to take that on. Like, kind of, I've always been, so even though I didn't want to talk about sex or crude stuff, I was always slightly on the edge of being a little bit cheeky, but never sort of fully delved into that until I got a bit older. But I remember feeling dead cheeky because I was telling the joke that had chlamydia in it, and I was like, I'm so naughty.
Tell me any memories you have of the performance, like while you're up there. And
I remember not realising how bright it would be because I was used to being on stage. I'd done like plays and stuff since I was 12. But I remember like obviously just that spotlight being on you, and I'd never really taken the audience into consideration because obviously when you do a drama piece or a play, you're looking at your actors and you're looking at other people. You're very rarely making direct eye contact because it's like the fourth wall's there. And it was the first time I was like, oh, there's people. Like, and I'm not playing to other people on stage. The people I'm playing to are, and it was that weird thing, and I've actually 6 years on only just started to be able to do it, is like looking people in the eye. I've got a real bad habit, and especially from the start because I was so nervous, I would look over everybody because I wasn't, that's where I was used to looking as a actor, was just out and not at anybody. And I had to like just slowly like train my brain to look at people. But then it would freak us out that I was looking at people. And I was like, oh my God, like, no, I shouldn't be able to see these people. And that's the weirdest thing I still find, is going out on stage and being like, oh, I can see yous. Like, this is weird. Because obviously in a play, it's just the audience is usually pretty dark. You can't see anyone. You don't interact with anyone. You're in your own little bubble. But with this, I was like, oh, no. This is weird. Turn the lights down. I don't want to see them.
You said there that you just wanted to make sure that you said what you wanted to say and that a laugh would be a bonus.
Yeah.
So how did it feel to, you know, get that laugh and then go back to watching Russell Howard and going, right, I wonder what that's like.
It was realizing such a relief because I was like, because I'd gone into it with no ulterior motives. I was like, this is just me trying stand up for the first time and possibly me starting a fun new hobby. So there was no pressure on it compared to when I did competitions later and I was like, I'm in this to win this kind of thing. And I remember getting that first laugh and kind of being taken aback by it and being like, what? Hang on. You weren't supposed to. Well, not that they weren't supposed to laugh, but I was like, oh, I didn't think anyone would laugh. And it kind of like, you don't realise how sort of tense you've been until you get that first laugh and you feel your body just like deflate a little bit kind of thing, but in a good way. And you're like, oh shit, yeah, this is fine, this is okay, like just have fun with it, just enjoy it. And then I remember going back to watching live comedy off that, and that's when it flipped and I was like, instead of thinking, oh, I wonder what it's like to get like that, I was like, I want to get those laughs. Like,
great show.
Thank you. I was like, I went from being like, oh, I wonder what it must be like for people to laugh like that, to being like, I want to be on that stage and I want people to laugh at me. And at first, I just wanted to do it as a hobby. I didn't think that... I thought the comedians you saw on telly were the only, like, proper professional comedians. I thought the ones you saw, like, in the comedy clubs, I thought they were just... had other jobs, and which obviously some of them do, I know that now, but I didn't realise they were professional comedians as well. I thought they were, like, me, just doing it for a hobby, but happening to get sort of, like better gigs out of it. And then it was only when I got my first paid one, I was like, what? And they were like, yeah, we can pay you for it. And I was like, oh, people like me don't get paid. I'm not a proper comic. And they were like, no, but you could be. Like, so we're giving you your first rung on the ladder kind of thing. And I was like, oh, shit, so I could do this as a job. Like, people could pay us. This could be a proper thing. And everyone was like, has this never crossed your mind? And I was like, well, no, I was doing it as a hobby. I never got into it thinking I would do it as a job. It was something I enjoyed. And like I say, I just looked at comics on the telly and I was like, yeah, they're the ones who do it as a job. And I just hadn't even considered that middle ground of the circuit comedy. And I was like, fuck, yeah. I don't know why I hadn't put two and two together. Like, obviously these are professional comedians. Like, this is amazing.
If you could go back, Heaton's?
Yes, yeah.
May 2012?
Yeah.
And right before you're going on stage, the MC's gone up. You know that you're next. You're getting those feelings. Your heart's starting to go faster. If you could just take yourself aside for a second.
Yeah.
And say something to yourself before you went up. Looking back now, what would you say?
I would tell myself to calm down and enjoy it, because this is the start of a very long roller coaster, and this is the first up, definitely.
That's nice. So that was your first gig?
Yeah, first one.
And there we have it. That is your episode for this week. As I said, a bit of a short one, even the end there and the start. We just kind of get into it. It was late at night. I'm pretty sure I had a few beers. Oh, yeah, I did. And I recorded a lot of podcasts. Lauren had just done two shows that evening. Not that we didn't half-ass it, but we just didn't, you know. We didn't hang around doing the intro chat for too long. We didn't exchange too many pleasantries at the end. It was like, here's the pod, here you go. Is that all you want? Right, good luck. And sometimes that's all we need, you know? If you're on a longer commute on the way into work and you're like, oh God, why is this only like 35 minutes? Oh, and I need like another 10 minutes. Well, look, do you know what? Take those 10 minutes now. We didn't waste our time with the pod that day. Don't waste your time with the pod today. Well, I hope you've wasted this time, but take the next little few minutes to just sit there and think, wow, I would have more of this podcast, and I would have it sooner if I just subscribed on Patreon. If I went to patreon.com/myfirstgigpod and I paid just €5 a month, I'd get extended. I get it ad free. I get it early. And they're coming. Bonus episodes only to be heard on the €5 Patreon. So what are you waiting for, guys? Go on over there. And while you're doing that, go on over to My First Gig Pod on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on SnapTalk. I just did that joke, didn't I? Such a dad joke, just getting the social media wrong. What did I say? SnapTalk. Everyone knows it's TikChat. Hey! Did it twice. Can't keep a good man down. Thanks so much to my guest this week, Lauren Patterson. As I said, go to lauren-patterson.com/gigs to see where she is. Soho Theatre in London coming up in December. And yeah, what will we do next week? Who will be the guest next week? I'm looking at the list of recorded acts. Some fantastic ones. Absolutely bleeding deadly ones. I think next week, Lauren had mentioned going to Montreal for Just for Laughs. Well, I recorded a podcast this summer with a comedian called Lara Bites. She was over for the Paddy Power Comedy Festival, and she dropped into Cherry after the festival to practice her set for a recording of New Faces at Just for Laughs. So, next week, tune in for Lara Bites on My First Gig Pod. I'm Dwayne Dugan, at Dwayne Dugan on everything. Now YouTube. I always had a YouTube, but they only introduced handles last week. And not for everybody. I've got a few channels and they won't give me handles, but for my personal one, at Dwayne Dugan. That's D-U-A-N-E-D-O-O-G-A-N. And yeah, look, as I said, we're going to keep this tight, keep this short, keep this smooth and slow. If you had fun, just tell people. If you had a lot of fun, start giving me your money. But thank you joining the podcast this week. Give it up once again, everyone, for Lauren Patterson. Round of applause. There we go. I hope you're on the bus clapping, everybody. And tune in next week for Lara Bites. But while you wait for that, head on over to Acast. Head on over to wherever you get your podcast. And we've got a whole rake of interviews waiting for you. I'm going to read them all out to you now. Yeah, all of them? Yeah, every single one of them. Paul Smith, Mary Beth Barone, Rhys James, Flo and John, Alison Spittle, Joe Lysa, Django Gold, Carmen Lynch, Tom Rhodes, Kate Willett, Mary DeRosa, Adam Caton Holland, Emma Willman, Todd Barry, Langston Kerman, Kerry Pritchard McLean, Sean Walsh, Jamali Maddox, Stuart Goldsmith, Catherine Bohart, Laura Lex, Reginald D. Hunter, Art Lohannon, and James Acaster. And there's more coming. And there's more coming to the bonus on Patreon. And if you want more of me, if you've enjoyed what you've heard from me, then you can follow me home after this podcast. Although we're kind of apart when we're listening. Give me a text and let me know where you are. Because if I'm busy, maybe you shouldn't follow me home. But until then, have a good night, folks. We'll see you next week. All the best, Toodles. Good luck. See you. Good night. Adios.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa.
You've been listening to My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan on Acast. Follow online at My First Gig Pod or at Dwayne Dugan. For classic episodes, ad-free, early access and more, head to myfirstgigpod.com. This is My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan, powered by Acast. Enjoy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.